can think about it this way. If you think about gravity as something that sort of distorts space-time, as in Einstein's theory, you know, gravity kind of makes dents in space-time, and that allows things to move around. Dark matter is something that makes a dent, and dark energy is something that tries to pull it all apart and stretch it out again. And so if we look at the sort of pie chart of the universe, we know to a pretty high degree of precision that most of the universe is dark energy, and then besides that, the most of the rest is dark matter, and then there's this little 5% slice that is stuff we remotely understand. All the things that we can see are in that little 5% slice. So that's what we know about what the universe is made of. But what about, what's really out there? What about the edge of the universe? One of the things that I get asked most often is, does the universe have an edge? You know, what's beyond the edge? What's it expanding into? All of this sort of thing. This is a picture of the edge of the observable universe. Now, I was talking with a student recently, a high school student, who saw this picture and said, oh, that's the edge. But that's not the case. In this case, it's just we're in the center of this kind of, this is like a projection of the sky. So it's sort of like if you have a projection of the Earth as a sphere, and you project it into an oval, that's what this is. But you have to imagine we're kind of in the middle of this, and this is what we see when we look out into the sky. And what this is actually a map of the afterglow of the Big Bang. So long, long time ago, the universe was hot and dense, and in this sort of fiery plasma state. And when that was happening, the sort of photons and the light and the matter were all sort of mixed up together in this hot, fiery state. The whole universe was like that. But over time, it cooled down. And when we look out into the universe, we're looking out into the past, because every time you look farther away, you're looking farther back in time, just because it takes light some time to travel to you. So for each sort of foot that you look into the distance, you get a nanosecond delay of the light time. So if I'm looking at the back row, I'm looking at maybe 50, 80 nanoseconds ago. So you guys are in the past back there. I'm in the future, according to you. Anyway, so when we look far enough into the universe, we can actually see directly the time when the universe was in that hot, fiery state. And this is what it looks like. I mean, it actually looks like microwave radiation, which I can't show you on a slide, but if you change the wavelengths and change the contrast, you can see something like this. And these little fluctuations in the universe here, these are actually density fluctuations, and over time, those things are sort of collecting into other places where more matter comes together, and it eventually turns into galaxies and clusters of galaxies and things. And so that's where the structure of the universe comes from. And we can make simulations of the universe, and we see this beautiful cosmic web where you have clusters of galaxies and filaments and big voids, and that's kind of the structure of the universe, this big cosmic web. And if we compare, you know, surveys of galaxies, everything really does seem to be laid out in this sort of structure. Like, we have these clusters, and we have these filaments, and we have these voids, and it kind of repeats. And that all comes from that very early time, and it seems to be pretty much the same everywhere we look in the universe. If we were to, you know, sort of zoom out, it would look the same. It's called the cosmological principle that there's no sort of special place in the universe. Everything is more or less the same. Every part of the universe looks a lot like other parts of the universe. And from that, what we're able to learn from that is that although there's sort of an edge to how far we can see in the universe, because if we look far enough away, we're looking into that primordial plasma and we can't see past it, there doesn't seem to be an edge to the actual universe. At least there's nothing that indicates that one direction is closer to the edge of the universe than another. This seems to be that the entire universe is basically the same in every direction, and there doesn't seem to be an edge to reality, or at least if there is, it's so far away that we can't see it, that we couldn't possibly see it, because it would take so long for the light to get from there to us that the universe hasn't had that much time in the history of the universe yet. So there's sort of a limit to what we can understand about the universe just by looking out into it, because we reach this limit of how far we can see. But there is another frontier in our study of the universe, which is the particle frontier. So one of the things about modern physics is that we're able to actually learn about the universe, about the cosmos, by looking at subatomic particles, by using things like the Large Hadron Collider to collide particles together and look at the debris that comes out, and we learn something about the structure and the potentially the fate of the universe by looking at the laws of physics as told to us by interactions of subatomic particles. So this is a picture of an interaction in the CMS experiment, which is part of the Large Hadron Collider. So you may know that the Large Hadron Collider found the Higgs boson a couple years ago, and that was a very exciting thing. The Higgs boson is a particle that's part of the standard model of particle physics. It's our sort of full understanding of how particles work in the universe. And it was sort of the cornerstone of the standard model. We call it the standard model because it's something that just really, really works. And it seems to have passed every test. But, you know, we're still always looking for new things. But so far, the standard model of particle physics works really well. Unfortunately, when the Higgs boson was discovered, something about the properties of the Higgs boson, the mass of the Higgs boson, told us something a little bit unsettling. So this is a graph of the mass of the top quark, which is a subatomic particle, versus the mass of the Higgs boson. You don't have to understand much about this mass, but about this plot. But what we're showing here is that there are different parts of this sort of parameter space. There's different areas of what these masses could have been that would tell us different things about whether the universe is stable or unstable or metastable, which means it's stable for now, but it might become unstable in the future. And basically what the mass of the Higgs boson told us is that we seem to be living in a part of this space. The properties of these particles seem to tell us that our universe might be metastable, just on the edge of stability, not really stable. Now, what does it mean for the universe not to be stable? Well, there might be different parts of the universe that have different properties. And we draw it like this. We draw it as sort of there's a landscape of the universe. And on large scales, like extremely large, much more, well, larger than we can see, but there's sort of this landscape where different parts of the universe have different fundamental properties. You know, you might have a different gravitational constant in one part of the universe, or you might have a different mass of an electron or charges of particles. All the properties of subatomic particles might be different. The properties of space-time might be different in different parts of the universe. And it might be possible that the part of the universe that we're in might not be a stable part. So if you think about it as just two possibilities where there's sort of this, there's sort of a valley over here and a valley over here, and the universe can live in one of these two valleys. One of them might be a false vacuum and one of them might be a true vacuum, which means that this one is kind of more stable than this one. Like if you're in this, if you put a ball in this little valley over here and you give it a push, it can go over the bump and end up in this one, and it's more stable there. It takes more energy to move it out of this one into that one than to move it out of this one into that one. You can kind of think of the whole universe as existing in these states, in one of these vacuum states. And, you know, ordinarily you'd think, well, if we're in this false vacuum here, it would take a lot of energy to get us over to that one, and we can't really produce that kind of energy. Even the Large Hadron Collider can't make enough energy to do that, so we're basically safe, except that we live in a quantum mechanical world. We live in a world where there's weird particle things that can happen, and it's possible to actually tunnel from the false vacuum into the true vacuum, which means that there could be sort of some adjacent part of the universe with different properties of nature that our universe could just spontaneously fall into. This is called vacuum decay. Now, if vacuum decay happened, this would be really bad. This would be really bad for two reasons. One is that when you transition from one state to the other, that would you'd go through this state of really high energy, and that would kind of destroy everything. And also, when you end up in the second vacuum, the properties of nature are different, so like maybe atomic bonds wouldn't work anymore, or maybe the shape of space-time would be different, and you know, gravity would feel different, and everything about the universe could be destroyed. But there's another part of it which it could actually be even worse, which is that in the 1980s, a couple of physicists called Coleman and DeLuca found that that the transition to the false vacuum, or to the true vacuum, rather, might cause the universe to just collapse completely. So they did some calculations, and they found that this kind of transition would ultimately result in just a universe completely collapsing upon itself, and completely destroying everything. And they and this paper where they figured this out is one of my favorite papers ever. It's really very poetically and heartbreakingly written when they work this out, because they're basically saying, like, you know, this could be the end of all reality. And so this is a quote from their paper. They say, "This is disheartening. The possibility that we are living in a false vacuum has never been a cheering one to contemplate. Vacuum decay is the ultimate ecological catastrophe. In a new vacuum, there are new constants of nature. After vacuum decay, not only is life as we know it impossible, so is chemistry as we know it. However, one could always draw stoic comfort from the possibility that perhaps in the course of time, the new vacuum would sustain, if not life as we know it, at least some structures capable of knowing joy. This possibility has now been eliminated." So, you know, vacuum decay would be, of course, a very bad thing for all of these reasons. It's actually not clear now, with our new understanding since the 80s, if vacuum decay would result in the collapse of the universe, or if it would just result in, you know, the problems of transitioning from one state to another. We're still working that out. There's sort of issues with string theory. But if it were to happen, if vacuum decay were to happen, the way it would work is you'd have a bubble of the true vacuum that would sort of start in one part of the universe. It would expand out at the speed of light. And if you're this person standing over here, because this bubble is expanding out at the speed of light, there's really no possible way that you would know what's about to happen. It's coming at the speed of light. So in a sense, it really wouldn't matter, because you wouldn't see it coming, you wouldn't feel it happen. It happens at the speed of light. If it happened right now, there's no consequence to that, right? Like, it's not like somebody's going to miss the universe because there's nothing left. Anyway, but, okay, it's okay. This picture that we have right here of where, you know, our universe maybe being metastable, maybe not, you know, maybe not being completely stable in our false vacuum. This picture depends on the Standard Model of Particle Physics being everything that there is. With this, in order to come to this conclusion, you have to assume that there is nothing new in the universe beyond the Standard Model of Particle Physics. But if we go back to this picture, this pie chart, the entire Standard Model of Particle Physics is that 5%. We know that there's stuff out there that doesn't fit into the Standard Model of Particle Physics. We know that there's dark matter that's probably some kind of new particle that's in addition to the Standard Model. It's some kind of particle that has different properties than anything in the Standard Model. We probably have to completely revise our understanding of particle physics to understand dark matter. And we know that there's dark energy. And dark energy is, this thing that's completely beyond the Standard Model and something entirely new. And even beyond that, there are other clues from things like the very early universe that, even aside from dark matter and dark energy, which are the vast majority of the universe, there are other things that come into the picture that are beyond the Standard Model and would make this vacuum decay thing impossible. Basically, if it was going to happen, it would have happened already. It can't happen. That's what we understand at the moment. But really, the whole point of talking about this, you know, this ultimate doom of the universe idea is that we need to constantly be finding new ways to look at the universe through, you know, creative ways to view the fundamental properties of particles, but also to go out into these frontiers, understand dark matter, understand dark energy, really press the boundaries of what we know and what we can know, and the things that we discover might be even more amazing than what we've discovered so far. That's it. Thank you.